You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Take one. Knock, knock.
Who it is?
We're Steven and Dana, and we can't believe you found our fucking podcast.
Our podcast.
We're so glad you're listening to it. We would never listen to it.
I don't even want to listen to it to edit it.
I don't even want to wake up in the morning.
We're Steven and Dana, and we're in the room.
God, I don't know this. I don't know how to open this.
Well, I'm going to open it. Welcome to your early morning edition of In the Room with Steven and Dana.
I have my
ice. I think this is our first AM episode.
Maybe. AM? You're probably right. I did my own at 8 a.m.
You did your solo saxophone.
I did a solo show.
That's amazing.
Yeah, talk about writing a solo show. Ooh, yeah, sure.
Speaking of solo shows.
Okay, wait, no, pin in you for a second. We have to catch up. Who was our last person?
Adam Feldman, which feels like decades ago.
It seems like decades. But welcome to December in New York, where everyone is like so
decade.
Incredibly busy, and we just try to get through it.
Just
amen.
Yeah,
doing what we can. I was just walking by Penn Station. You know those stairs on 7th Avenue that go into Penn Station that one should never take? Well, about 27 drunk Santas just came out of it.
Is it SantaCon today?
It's SantaCon this morning.
Oh, no.
Tis the squeezing.
Yes. Oh, my God.
I enjoy people who enjoy doing things. Does that make sense?
I do, too, but I feel
enjoy yourselves today.
I'm glad it's scheduled.
Yes. And it's not just a, guess what today is.
But it's a great reminder that day drinking is not for everyone.
Yep.
This is one of those days.
Thank you. PSA.
True. We'll find out tomorrow morning who those people are.
Yeah, absolutely.
We'll find out today by 4 o'clock.
I want to say I did some night drinking last night, and I couldn't feel fresher.
Congratulations.
Yeah. I was like, ooh, 9 a.m. I'll be good.
That's fine.
Did you like do something different?
We did a Wisconsin supper club dinner party last night with all my Wisconsin friends. So we all brought a dish to pass. There was a green bean casserole.
Great.
I made like that white drippy coleslaw for the first time in my life. We had like pulled pork. We had a tater tot casserole. We had a Jell-O savory pretzel thing. That's very
savory Jell-O pretzel,
which
thing.
Is not a dessert. It is meant to go on the plate.
Amen.
Yeah, so we did that last night. We had Brandy Old Fashions. Pat Beer made his own Blue Moon ice cream.
Wow.
He made his own ice cream. It was gorgeous.
I did that once with Thai iced tea. I did like a Thai iced tea ice cream.
Ooh. Thai iced tea ice cream?
Yeah, it was great.
Thai ice cream ice cream?
It was great.
That's magic. Well, you look beautiful, too. Congratulations.
Oh, my God. Yeah, already.
I have, like, leftover makeup from last night.
I see glitter.
Thank you. Yeah, I just didn't wash it off because I was like, maybe I'll have
a
little leftover
kind of
magic.
In the same boat.
Come on. Come on.
Whatever. I'm a mom.
You guys, this is Annalee Ashford.
Hi, guys.
If you haven't picked up on that. And she brings the magic wherever she goes.
Oh, yeah. That's really sweet. You know what's magical? These snowball mics. Yeah, just to share with you at home, these mics are like, they're literally called the snowball. Mm-hmm. And they're very future.
You're getting real nice and into it. It's like a child for you. Like,
yes.
You're going to teach it. It's ABC.
I mean, it
it's
looks like
soon.
A little person. It has a big head and a stick figure body and no arms.
Yeah, it's very Pixar.
And three legs.
It's microphone.
Very Pixar. I love it.
If Wally were a microphone, maybe.
But we're also in the setting. We're at my production company, and that's where we are today, this morning.
And there's like a gentle spabby in the background.
You know, the fresh lemongrass scent of Primary on 30th Street. So yeah, that's where we are. Happy December, everyone.
Happy December.
And what else do we have to talk about? We have something coming up. Do we want to say what it is in January?
Not yet. I think after the holidays.
Oh, whatever. People need to buy their tickets.
Fine. Get a ticket to BroadwayCon because we are interviewing Nancy Opal.
You are?
At BroadwayCon.
It's a world of Opal abilities.
Do you know I have her jacket, her show jacket from Sunday in the Park.
Shut up.
I have to give it back to who gave it to me, but it was lent to me with. I have it and it's in pristine condition, but I'm giving it back to who it was given to me from.
Will you send me a picture of it before you do?
Yeah, it's very special. But anyways, I love Nancy Opal. I think she's genius, magic, special person.
And I've never met her.
She's got a sprinkle of glitter on her face, too, somewhere.
She's been on our dream guest list for a while.
Oh, that's great.
We were pretty much gifted her as a guest at Broadway Con. They were like, who do you want? We're like,
thank you,
duh, Nancy Opal. He showed up at the airport at LaGuardia with a sign that said Opal, waiting for me.
Oh my God,
and
I love it.
You're going to be in my life forever.
What if she was so on that plane, though? That wouldn't have ended well for me.
She would have been fine. No,
it would have been great.
I'll give you a ride.
Yeah.
What's up, Nancy?
Also, we're all in soft clothes. You are wearing a Splash Mountain
sweatshirt from Disney World.
Gorgeous.
God bless. Gorgeous. Do you like the Splash Mountain ride?
Love it. It's so long and weird. It's also totally culturally inappropriate and from the film, but I think I'm thinking back on the ride. The ride is a little scary in moments. It's very long, which I really appreciate. It's just
Money's worth is what you're saying.
Yes,
sure. If you're gonna wait online,
but I don't. You know, Disney Plus just came out, and thank God you can't find the film because they can never show it again. That the ride was sort of based on.
Speaking of Disney, I just got a text from Andrew Hollenbeck, who is the company manager at Aladdin, and says, happy interview, because he knows that we're very excited to have you on today.
That's so sweet.
Because you're a gay icon.
No.
Yes, yes. Oh. You're a gay icon first, and then second, you are a Tony Award winner, which is why I am wearing a bejeweled necklace on top of my gym outfit, because I am going to work out later.
Also, what Barbara shirt is that? Because that is real good.
This, I believe they were selling this at her concert. Oh. Is there stuff in the back?
The music, the memories.
The magic!
The magic!
Tour 2016.
Yeah, and you do have a Tony, so I have to wear a fancy
You're so funny.
Gym outfit.
That's so funny.
I just brought a menu of vintage eyebrows.
Which I need that. Where'd you get that shirt?
I had it made.
Are you kidding me?
I have the graphic. I found it on the internet. I'll totally.
It's the best thing I've ever seen.
Who are you?
You can choose
who do you identify with?
Isn't it immediately? I'm like, well, my eye lines up with Betty Davis. I have a Betty Davis. Just maybe because it's big and round. I'm not Marlena Dietrich, but I like that eye makeup the most.
I think when I saw Natalie and I was wearing this, I think she said she was an Elizabeth Taylor that wanted to be a Carmen Miranda.
I love her. Of course she said that. That is so funny. I mean, I am not Betty Davis, but I feel like my eyes are more like Betty Davis's, maybe. I just noticed.
Yep.
Such a screen queen.
I'm obsessed with. But also, I love Gloria Swanson's eye. That's really good.
Well,
it's a good
didn't
shot.
Need words, because they had faces.
I mean, I love you. The best. Nothing better. And Barbara's version of her version was the only version that I listened to for a long time.
Me too, because she did it at her concert, the 1994 or whatever.
Yeah, that's how I learned it. And I used to sing it with a
turban.
As if we never said goodbye.
Yeah, and it was part of a medley, I believe. I don't know. She's done it.
Yes, absolutely. Do you know that 2016 concert, I got to go to the dress rehearsal. Can you believe that? At the Staples Center.
We think we're
Center.
So cool. Okay,
oh, I'm not
ahead.
Cool. But I just got really lucky. I was doing Masters of Sex, and our head of hair did her hair, and our person who did our magical nails also did Barbara's nails. So sometimes she'd be like, I'm late, coming from Malibu. And I'd be like, oh, well, I wonder whose house she's coming from.
Yeah. She lives in Malibu.
Isn't that amazing? So they know how much they know how obsessed I am with her. And it was 2 weeks before I had my son. I was so pregnant. And I cried the whole concert. She came out. I cried for two whole numbers. My friend who was with me was like, honey, are you okay? Are you going to go into labor?
Can you be here?
Wouldn't that be great? Yeah. Wouldn't it be great if I I went into labor during Barbara Streisand's dress rehearsal concert at the Staples? Didn't happen.
Yeah.
But it was totally overwhelming. I don't know if I can ever meet her because I'll be totally overwhelmed.
No, she's cool. I have never met her, but I've been in the room.
Oh, my God. But
in the room with Stephen and Dana.
I'd be crying.
Yeah.
But she's cool. She only wants to eat and eat coffee, ice cream with you.
Just bring her a lobster.
She wants to wear soft clothes. She does not want to do the thing.
Which I love.
Yeah. Bette Midler is scarier to me. But she's also my queen, and I've actually met her many times.
Me too.
And, I find her more, guarded. But she's also so cool. She's also so famous. And she's also, she needs to kind of protect because people are crazy. I understand that.
Totally. Mm-hmm.
But
and they're still, they're artists still trying to make art. Yeah. You know, so you're like, what is that?
Yeah.
What does it feel like for you right now and what you want to make? And because you're so famous, there's restrictions on what you can and can't make as an artist. You know, just something that like we don't kind of always think about. But anyways, and they were fierce women before, well, in a time when you had to fight harder and be fiercer to like get your way as an artist.
Yeah. Okay, Lady Gaga coming out in a mermaid outfit in a wheelchair. Girl, Beth's been doing that forever, and she was not ripping off anybody. She was the first one.
Yeah.
So you know what I'm saying? Like, it's all kind of derivative, but they're, like, the first. Although, you know, they all have their inspirations. Although, Barbara kind of famously doesn't. She's always asked, like, who did you look up to? And she's like, nobody, I just like to say. You know, it's like, okay.
Well,
if because we're all doing you.
But, I know,
we're
right?
We're all doing you.
But I would argue with her that she had... The great gift of Funny Girl was that she got to carry on the legacy of Fanny Brice without anybody really saying it. You know, she did. She really like picked up a piece of history and continued it on and used
that
it.
That would have otherwise fallen by the wayside, I feel. Who else was going to do that?
And Bette did the same thing in a way. It's like these fierce Jewish women.
So
who
with
are,
Sophie Tucker and like her kind of like old vaudeville style.
Yeah. You know, like picking up a cue from another funny lady. But those first 5 years of Barbara's career, like, how could she not have been inspired by Fanny Brice? Not it was wasn't just in Funny Girl. You listened to all of her early club work. She was doing Fanny, you know?
Yeah.
And she still does, but it's Barbara.
But it's Barbara.
But
and she was uninhibited. She had something to prove, and now she has something to prove in a different way. Ugh. Like, to prove she is worthy of our love and affection. Like, I am worthy of being this huge legend that I supposedly am. But before they get there, they're just like, I am this.
Oh, yeah.
And now she's, like, terrified to get on stage,
which
you know?
Which is something so that I love to hear about. Yes. Because it just helps it. The neuroses of the performer, which is a normal, healthy thing to have, but it just it makes you feel a little bit better. You're like, oh, everybody feels like that. Huh, great.
Do you think Barbara Streisand takes beta blockers?
Yes, probably. No, I don't know, but I hope so because it would make me feel good.
You're in the world. What drugs do people take?
What drugs do people take? I feel like people
to perform, not to go crazy. You guys, don't go crazy.
Yeah.
Don't go nuts.
God, if you're doing 8 shows a week, nobody's doing any fun drugs. You know, no way. You got to live like a nun, and also
like a nun.
Like
I'm
a
obsessed
nun.
With you.
But I, you know, I there's many, many fantastic actors that not just on stage. But also many actors on camera who take beta blockers because the camera catches everything. Mm-hmm. You know, you can be sitting in the front row and not catch what's happening behind the eyes. But when the camera's on you, it does. So I know quite a few screen actors who... Screen actors? Gross. That's so 80s.
Are they a member of the guild?
Screen. So I know as many screen actors.
The plasma actors?
Oh, my God. Plasma actors. But yeah,
that's
so a lot of people take beta blockers. And then also... Xanax, Klonopin in small doses, maybe daily or not daily, depending on what somebody's
very
chemical
real.
Makeup is. And the other thing that's like fantastic is I think there's like such a conversation happening now about mental health that didn't happen before. And that's so helpful. Everybody's brain chemistry is different. And also, oftentimes, if you are an artist, you have some magic things happening in your brain anyways that make you different and special. So that may mean you may have chemically different things that you need help with or not need help with or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I always try to like remind myself when I'm in a room of artists that everybody has special brains. Some people have gotten help with their special brains and some people have not.
Amen. And with that, that has been our episode.
It's a great way to describe our podcast too.
Special brains.
Special brains.
Special
is
brains.
The title.
In the
I'm
room
sorry,
with special brains.
What it's gonna be.
It's great.
Anyone who's listening to this podcast knows who you are.
Oh, that's really sweet.
Correct.
But we should probably say who you are. Annaleigh Ashford, star of stage and screen.
Star of stage and screen.
In a very cool way, and I want to get into it. But, like, you...
Yeah, I kind of want to start with something recent.
You've gotten into everything. You've gotten to dip your little unicorn tail into a lot of buckets.
I've been so lucky. At the beginning of my career, people were very quick to be like, well, you only play blondes and maybe just dumb blondes, and that's it. And then it was sort of, like, challenging in the first couple of years of anybody just, you know, for people to see me doing anything different. But then I got really lucky and I got to play Maureen in Rent, and it sort of just for some reason like cracked people's minds open to the possibilities of me being different people.
You cracked people's minds open into the possibilities of you being different.
Did it crack your mind open? Were you pushing yourself in that moment, or did you know, like, oh, I can also do Rizzo? Do you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. Were you like, I know what I can do?
I always was like, can I be Rizzo? You know, I always wanted to be something different.
No one
different.
Was pushing you into like,
no,
you should do Maureen. That'd be fun.
No, I was like, I'd like to play Maureen. That would be magic. That's like one of my bucket list roles.
Move with me.
Oh, right?
Just begging people to move with
Please.
You.
Please. Oh, it's my favorite part in the show. So it was still one of it's still one of the most enjoyable things I've ever done, playing Maureen. I loved the sing. I loved like coming on at the end of act one. There was something just weird and magic about that.
Sure.
You know, everybody has a different journey with different roles, but for me, that role in particular, it was just such a match.
And like a smaller house.
Yeah, it was intimate. We were at New World Stages. And also Michael Greif was so kind and wonderful to me and really like let me explore a totally, I don't want to like say new take on it, but I didn't do what they did originally. I took cues from it, kind of like I have many times where I've had to like reimagine a role that has been iconic.
Ask that about Dot. Like, how do you approach that and not copy paste?
Yeah, I was actually talking to Bruce about it yesterday about how Jake Gyllenhaal was not doing Mandy Patinkin, yet he so beautifully captured the essence of George and Mandy Patinkin. And he's not doing it, but he is... No one who's a fan of it is going to be upset.
Certainly
they're
going to
be like, oh, ooh, there's like a spice in there that needs to be in there.
Absolutely. Well, also when you're approaching like these iconic roles that not only... The thing that's tricky about Sunday in the Park is that you can go watch it online. You can go watch the original production on PBS, on YouTube, you know what I mean? So there's such a quick reference to what it was. It's not just like the audio that we have in our minds and we made up.
Mm-hmm.
So on that, I think in that instance, for me, it was important to like pay homage to Bernadette in a few subtle ways that people who know the original well would know. There's just like a few physical things that I chose to do and just a few vocal things that I chose to do. But I always just look at what's on the page and work from it in any other way that you would in any other role. And then you just kind of find your way to what, you know.
Was that a big conversation with Janine Tesori or Stephen Sondheim through the rehearsal process? Like, did you get stuck? Like, I don't want to do it this way because that's how Bernadette did it. Like, what are my other options?
Yeah, well, you know, there's been enough productions of it since then for, like, the creatives that they've seen it so many times that I don't think that they are stuck in a memory of the piece.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say Stephen Sondheim did have some very specific notes about specific things in the piece. That I know are from the original, just because he told me, James Pine told me, and then also
therefore it's true.
And Bernadette told me there's just one beat that after she saw the show, she was like, "He gave you that note, didn't he?" And I said, "Yes." And she was like, "Oh, he's always gave it to me too." So that was like magical. But I think I've been super lucky that in that process, everybody was so open to both of us finding the piece, you know, sort of from scratch.
You were my first Sunday in the Park experience.
Oh my gosh.
I didn't know the show. I don't have a Sunday in the Park tattoo like my friend Steven here. People will listen. And people did listen.
We all have strengths.
And I thought you were fabulous. And
thank you.
I was catering the opening night party.
Oh, really?
And so I have to say that you, that night... are probably the most gorgeous person I've ever seen in life.
That's really sweet.
Your hair was just like a scalloped situation. Ah! I can't, you guys, look it up. Opening
really
night of Sunday. It was gorgeous. You're gorgeous.
You.
I'm just like walking around with champagne, like, no, but Annalise over there.
That's so
like,
sweet.
The family's over there.
Oh my
it was
God.
So nice they to were, get to like share that with you, though. It's like,
you were there
I was
as like
there
an actual
Penny.
Person in a toxic
oh
room.
You got to
you were
be
there
my plus
Penny.
One without being my plus
I
one.
I know. I was like, I'm in the room.
I was like, I wanted you there so bad, and
yeah.
we manifested.
Yeah, yeah.
At the
How
library.
How about Penny?
How about Penny?
The best.
Penny Fuller, past guest.
I love her so much.
Love her so
She's
much.
Magical.
Are you so looking forward to doing Dot again? Is it is Sarna going with it? Is it the same production?
Yeah. It's the same production. Unfortunately, we can't bring over all of the Americans.
Of
so
course.
It'll be a... Well, there's always like a... I'll be completely honest. We have so many full British companies come over from the UK to do pieces. Think about how many we've had in the last 5 years, you know, where the entire
yes,
British company
yes.
comes over. But we don't
You're
do
right.
that. There's like three
that.
Or four of us go over there. So
yes.
just on that note, just selfishly, like, I wish Penny Fuller was coming with it. You know what I mean? Like,
of course.
And also, I always say that the brilliance of that show is twofold. It's not the Dot and the George. It's the piece and it's the ensemble. The show really works best.
Like a painting, it's not just one, right?
No.
It's like it's all the aspects.
Yeah, I feel like everything I've ever been in that went well, it's because every single person on the stage is committed to telling a good story,
yeah.
you know, and all the stars aligned and it was all the right people.
We
you
say
know?
That about Kinky Boots too, actually. A
Absolutely.
Lot. We've had a lot of Kinky Boots friends and fam
yeah.
on, and we constantly come back to that, like, ooh, you guys are a good ensemble.
Absolutely.
You're a fantastic ensemble.
A beating heartbeat across the stage.
Yeah. Sure.
And I feel this the same. I got so lucky with You Can't Take It With You. It was the same thing where the ensemble was so the group of 22 actors was so outrageously gifted. Everybody was just... And then on top of that, beautiful humans. You know, it's like we just got lucky. You know, theater is communal.
Mm-hmm.
It's not solo. It's communal.
We had your stage manager, Martha, on the
oh,
podcast.
Really?
We've had Elizabeth Ashley on the podcast.
Oh, my God. That's amazing.
We've dipped into the barrel if you can't take it with you.
That's amazing.
We've got to get the snakes on.
Isn't Elizabeth Ashley like, you're like...
Iconic.
Iconic. And then...
What a special brain that is.
So
unbelievable.
We shared... Me
brain.
And Christine Nielsen and Julie Halston shared a dressing room that shared a bathroom with Elizabeth Ashley's dressing room. So we kind of shared with Elizabeth, too, because we shared a bathroom with her. But she would get there, like, before us, and she wasn't on until Act 3, which is also just another thing that... I'm such a participant in the history of theater. Like, you know,
mm-hmm.
all three of us are at this table.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that I just think, I'm not going to be like, oh, the millennials. But I am going to say that is an important thing that needs to continue in the tradition of people in the theater. Like, it can't just get lost because we're so dependent on, like, YouTube clips.
Absolutely.
Do
I think
know?
We all had to learn it the hard way. I would
yeah.
go to the public library and get cast albums.
Yes.
And I would pull out scripts if they would have them in Thousand Oaks. Like, trying to hunt down that material so I could figure it out.
Yes.
Of course, in some ways, I wish I could have just sat at home and been on the internet all day and, like, download it all at once.
Yes.
But it stayed special because I couldn't.
And also, there's, like, an importance to know not just who's in just the generation before you, it's the generations before you that I think is, like, something that needs to... When I teach, I'll ask questions about, like, even just Fosse. Like, people don't know enough about Fosse and Gwen Verdon. You know what I mean? Like, it's great that we have... Like, I like that, you know, the Fosse-Verdon, you know, thing happened, which
sure.
is magic, and all the people who worked on it were so special and great. And so that's important. But I still feel like this generation coming up, I'm like, did they watch it? I hope they watched it, you know?
Your first version can't be Glee. But here's also what I'm going to say about Glee. It's twofold. Your first version can't be Glee. If it is, that's a great way to
At least you've been
dig
exposed.
Deeper. You're
yeah.
exposed. And also, thank you for the exposure.
Absolutely.
So the fact that it's being made at all,
yes,
is incredible.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. We're like in this sort of magical time where musical theater is cool. So, yes, like, let's all just jump
again
on that bandwagon.
Not the first time it's been cool.
Yeah.
What I did for love was on the top 40.
The Rosie O'Donnell show,
yes,
is our age right now. And she lit a theater fire across the nation. And yeah, I will go to my grave. She is why I live in New York from Wisconsin. I'm in the middle of nowhere. And Rosie O'Donnell was my outlet.
Access.
She told me.
Between Tony Awards.
She brought Broadway.
Yeah. We could see performances.
Yeah. Yes. I don't know Megan Mullally first from Will and Grace. I remember her as Rosie's friend.
I love it.
Who was in How to Succeed with Rosie's other friend, Matthew Broderick. And like, they brought theater to me.
I love
specifically
that.
To me.
I love that,
yeah,
so much.
I told her. She was in my first Broadway show that I came to see, which was In the Heights. Oh. I came with my college. We were doing our showcase. And I spotted Rosie O'Donnell, my queen, in the mezz, sitting with her now ex-wife, who I now know, and it's so crazy. I walked over to her at intermission. I couldn't handle myself for the entire first act. I'm like, not watching In the Heights. I'm watching Rosie O'Donnell watch In the Heights. So I walked to Rosie. I'm like, I love you. You're why I live here. And she was like, welcome. You know,
so
welcome.
Great. Yes.
I'm like,
that's amazing. You got a your
magical
welcoming committee was Rosie O'Donnell. I mean,
yeah,
also we have a shared. It was meant to be, and you're meant to be here.
Thank you so much for that.
Yeah, that's so true.
But you're from Denver.
Yes, I'm from Denver.
Not New York or LA.
No. But I always say, like, I always tell this joke that I deeply wanted New York City to be the New York City that I fell in love with from All That Jazz.
Mm-hmm.
And the Turning Point.
Talk to this guy.
The Turning Point.
Oh, it's so good. I used to watch it over and over again.
Same.
Oh, so good. And my mom loved it, which was always, like, great. You know, we used to go to Blockbuster, and I would, like, figure out, like, that wasn't always in the musical section. Sometimes
comedy
it was just
slash musicals.
Yes,
section.
But that sometimes turned just gay stuff. I knew too, like as a little girl, was like, I know magic.
Misc.
Just other. Nothing other misc. Yeah,
behind
I did,
the adult section.
Riff raff.
Yes, I did. My very first show in Denver was, well, I found a dance studio that was magical, which I talk about.
Which I want to
about.
Come back to, because you pay such homage to it.
So I basically, I talk about it a lot in my first, like, club act that I ended up doing, like, I did it on PBS in my life from Lincoln Center. But it was an unusual thing to do in one of those PBS specials,
yes,
to talk for 10 minutes. But I feel like cabaret is like a dying, lost art form. True, proper cabaret. But I feel like it's making a comeback through drag,
mm-hmm,
which is amazing. And I'm so grateful for it. And I love that RuPaul's Drag Race is becoming such a, like, cultural pop phenomenon. And I love that Queer Eye's come back, because I think it gives another breath to, like, this world of performance art / cabaret / comedy / gay magic.
Yeah, turning the world on its head, holding a mirror up to society and be like, this is what you look like.
Yes,
or, like,
absolutely,
let's have fun with this.
Absolutely, and also, like, another form of stand-up, which is what cabaret,
yes,
is to me. So,
yes.
And stand-up is making such a resurgence.
Yes.
And it's a cool thing to do.
And it's also being challenged in its form right now by, you know, by people like Hannah Gatsby.
Oh, my God.
Right? And,
yes,
you know, so anyways, I basically am my... In this club act, I, like, used it as an opportunity to talk about my first singing / dance teacher, who, her name was Kit Andre, KitAndreE with an accent. And she was such a larger-than-life character. She wore false eyelashes every single day that were, like, a full 2 inches. And she wore big, huge Lucite platform heels and big oversized Disney t-shirts and rhinestones. Yes, the best. Oh, amazing. So anyway, she really was so formative in my life as a singer, but even more as an actor. She would make me, like, break down songs as, like, an 8-year-old. I was breaking down, like, Mama Rose and Everything is Coming Up Roses, but not just the song, the entire show. We would go through, like, what does she want? How's she going to get it? And she was an incredible performer. She's truly, like, one of the best performers I've ever seen in my life. And she had a club in Denver called Kids Club in like the 70s and early 80s. And it was in Larimer Square, and she was really well known. And she was really well known for playing Mama Rose. She was a tiny, she wasn't even 5 foot. She was so petite and tiny, had white hair. Anyways, she like taught me about Liza and Judy and Barbara when I was like 7 years old. I was like buying every Barbara Streisand, you know, CD I could from the mall.
But like, speaking of special brains, you're so young.
Yeah, I was like seven.
Brain is breaking down Mama Rose, and you're like unfiltered because you don't know that you're not supposed to be playing Mama Rose, other than you can't be Mama anything because you're eight.
No, and I was like, oh, I'm singing as if I never said goodbye. I have to have a turban and I have to sit in the chair, and like that's just what we did.
That's drag.
Absolutely.
That's drag. We're performing gender. We're performing a mother.
Absolutely. And then when I was like nine, you could look up auditions in the paper. So I was always looking up auditions because I wanted to, you know,
learn and get better.
Yeah. Well, and even it's sort of the same businesswoman I am now. It's like, oh, yeah, I forgot it's a business. I really just I want to continue to grow, which sounds so cliche and gross. But it is. It's like I always gravitate towards that energy in the business rather than the business energy. Sometimes this like scares me. Like I'm bad at that part, you know.
I was listening to RuPaul's podcast coming in today because it gives me that juice that I need. Like it's so great. It's called What's the Tea? And
I've never listened to
it. Yeah, so and it's just like church for me in the morning. But Ru, and I wrote this down coming on in, he said, I don't have a career. I just show up for it.
Oh, that's so fierce. I love it. See how beautiful.
What a line. Because it's true.
And that's
no
all,
one's
yes.
giving you a gift. I don't have one. I'm not. It's not tangible. There are opportunities, and I show up.
Absolutely. And also,
and
like,
you can call whatever you want, but he's just having
that.
Fun.
And
yeah.
also, like, that's such an honor. Like, he's like giving such honor to the art, which mm-hmm. is, you know, then so. Speaking of Rue, I got Tina Denmark and Ruthless at the Theater on Broadway in Denver, which was the gay theater of Denver. And it was on Broadway in downtown Denver. So yeah. People would be like, you're on Broadway? Like at school. And I'd be like, well, I'm on Broadway in downtown Denver. But
it's a stepping stone.
You know. But my grandmother was played by a drag queen because that's how you do in that show. And also it's based on... Valley of the Dolls, All About Eve, Gypsy, and what else? Oh, The Bad Seed. So I watched them all over and over and over again. So I was like, I could quote, I can't anymore, but I could quote All About Eve and Valley of the Dolls like when I was like nine. For that entire summer, I would do like the whole movie. So the other thing, and then I marched in like the Pride Parade. And I learned what it meant to be a friend of Dorothy. And, you know, it was the mid-90s, so that was a different time in gay culture.
Yep.
And it was also, we were still in a crisis mode with AIDS. And there was all these people that I met in my life in the theater community who were struggling. And some of them did not fight their battle. You know, they lost mm-hmm. the battle, which was also something really important to see as a young person. And also as a person who feels like they are a member of... like the LGBTQ community in a positive way. Like, although mm-hmm. I am like a cis female who is really straight, I'm embarrassed how straight I am sometimes.
Get out.
You know,
get
where
out.
You're like, I'm sorry, I'm so straight. Like, I've tried so many times to like
try to bend me.
Yeah, I'm just like really straight.
No, you're meant to just be a gay icon. Yeah. Just blanket statement.
That's so sweet. But I guess what I'm saying is my sort of history as a child, I could not be more grateful because it made me aware of how special and important like the gay experience is and how its like role in art and culture, pop culture and theater especially, is like they're just married. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Thank God.
Thank
And that God. That is too what I feel like I just like every time I teach, I'm always like sort of like, I'm like, make sure you know all your gay magic because it's going to make you better as an artist.
Yeah, don't hide that under a bushel. Oh, no.
Yeah.
Wait, I'm going to say that again because I tripped over my words and I want to be a comic genius. Don't hide that under a bushel. Oh, no.
That was a good clean one, Dana.
Thank you.
Good. Enjoy that in post.
Not cutting that. I think what people are doing with their career now it all fluctuates and it's all over the place and good, fine. But I think what we did as kids really lays the groundwork and is such a huge part. It's kind of like a Venn diagram of like, this is what I grew up doing. And then like, here's my career. But like, this is like what made it. Like,
yeah.
My passion and all that started.
The roots.
The roots are, much deeper and more.
Long.
Yes.
And also, like, what did you gravitate towards as a child is still what you gravitate towards now. Like, mm-hmm. I watched Too Wong Fu, Thanks for Everything, like, on accident. Like, somehow it was, like, on one of, like, HBO. I don't even know. Mm-hmm. And I would look up when it was going to be on again and, like, get up. I remember getting up, like, late at night to, like, watch it. It was, like, came on at, like, 1 o'clock in the morning. I was, like,
I remember before TiVo.
Yeah. You had to, like,
you had to, like, set your VCR to start.
And also, how did I know when it was... I guess you could look up what was...
TV Guide.
TV Guide. That was how it... I'm like, isn't
Come
it crazy?
On.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
TV Guide.
TV Guide.
The
yeah.
Good. You have like the Excel spreadsheet of channels.
Yes.
And all the
It was my
bars.
Favorite magazine.
Yeah. With the magnifying glass, it was so small.
I know.
I could never read it.
I kind of like, you're like, oh, that'd be nice to have that again.
Wouldn't it?
Oh, all the things.
Bring a gift basket.
Yeah.
It was very Moira Rose. A gift basket of like old, like 90s shit. Like a TV Guide, a Reader's Digest, a Slinky, I don't know.
Highlights Magazine.
Yeah.
Yeah, Herbal's Essence.
Herbal
Essence.
Cucumber, what was it? The,
We were a Pantene house.
No, there was like a lotion that was cucumber.
Oh, yes. What was that brand that everybody had? Like,
yeah. When
you could get it at the grocery store, too. That's the thing. Like, you could get it at the grocery store.
Oh, people are screaming right now. It was like, oh my God.
Not the Queen Helene mint julep mask.
Oh, yes.
It's $5 a gallon.
I know what you're talking about. It was like cucumber mint, like, cream. Like
yeah,
a lotion.
And everybody
girl
had it.
Yeah, you had that and like your lip smackers.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
I know. Amazing.
I got into those because they used to come with like a carrying case that looked like a pager and nobody would ever get me a pager. And I wanted one, so I got them with like the Dr. Pepper flavor.
You did?
And I would never use them, but I would carry it around like a pager.
I love that. That's like so funny. Oh my God, it's amazing.
I loved a prop as a kid.
Me too.
Still love a prop.
Me too. I'll tell you what, every show I've ever been in, they're like, oh, more props? You want more props? But yeah, Mama likes a prop.
Props are great. Mm-hmm. And you do very well with a prop, kicking it back to Kinky Boots. Yes. That whole number.
That's a great example
of like props, and it's all you.
Oh, that's really sweet. You know, we like didn't have very much time to work on the number. Like I just remember like Jerry and I had like 2 hours on a Wednesday morning, you know, and like we sort of like planned it out and structured it. And he let me just play and be weird and improv, and then he would just like edit, and then he's a comedic genius, and so mm-hmm. he would be like, okay, what about this? What about this? And then he was like, go and fix it, girl. And then it was just like, I would just see how it would go every time we'd do it, you know, like every time we'd run it, we'd be like, how's it gonna go? But I always thought the song was just gonna get cut out of town. Like we had no idea what was gonna happen when we did it in front of people in Chicago. When you're doing a new piece, you think you know, but deep down you really have no idea how it's gonna go over. And thank God, the first night we did it in front of like an invited audience of 200 people, they were like crying and standing up. And we were like, oh,
we're on the right track.
Yeah. You know, and also, isn't it ironic that back then, Obama was in office. We were, you know, walking towards getting marriage equality. We were just, it felt like we were in such a different time and space. So we were like, well, this isn't a new message. And it's, you know, it feels urgent, but it doesn't feel as urgent as it did 10 years ago. And sadly, it was more urgent when it closed than it was when it opened.
Mm-hmm.
Like when I never seen the show before until the closing.
I think that's why it continued as long as it did and continues as long as it continues to. It's on boats. It's all over the country.
I think it could have kept running. You know, like there's a part of me that's like, if Moulin Rouge hadn't been coming in, maybe it would have had an, you know.
Certainly.
And also when it closed, it felt, well, I have so many like, obviously, so many personal like connections to the show about my life. You know, like we, like Stark was sitting in front of me and Billy was sitting across from me and we were all like, our lives are so different now. You know, I have a kid. Stark has two kids. Billy has an Emmy.
Yeah.
Billy has so
he
many
has
things.
Capes now.
I know.
But if we think about it, like Kinky Boots in Chicago was what, 2012? That's 8 years ago.
Yeah.
That's
it's
almost
wild.
A decade.
Oh,
Kinky
my God.
Boots is almost a decade old.
It's crazy. And I still like That's to have crazy. That many props in a song. You know, props just for me make.
Something
help me tell
to
a story.
Do. There's yeah. like no greater anxiety than not knowing what to do with my hands sitting at a table. I'm like, where am I comfortable?
Yeah.
Give me something to... Oh, I'm good.
And she's extremely anxious in the song. You know, mm-hmm. it's like, that's when you're most anxious.
Oh, so fun to get to use that.
Yeah.
Are you anxious on stage?
Oh, absolutely. Always. Okay. Yeah, I mean, you know... There's this great book called The Inner Game
of
Tennis that I read
a cool
in college.
Cucumber.
Oh, you're so sweet. But underneath
Marymount Manhattan College, our alma mater.
I mean, Marymount Manhattanus.
Okay, what was it? What was the book called?
It's called The Inner Game of Tennis, and Ellen Ornstein used to give it out to people as like one of her textbooks. And it's on my bedside table right now. I've been like taking a peruse. But basically, it's written about tennis, but it's for everything, and tons of performers read it, and it's basically just about helping you remember what it feels like to be in the zone. And also, there's an element of that, like, anxiety, anxious energy, nervousness. You know, we always say, like, you know, when you're teaching a class, you're always like, well, it's going to happen. You can't be a human and not feel it. And it's also part of the energy of it all. And also, you can feel fine, and other people can be so nervous, and energy is spreading, you know, like, it you know, moves.
Especially
so,
in theater.
Oh, my God, you can feel the house. When it rains out and the weather's bad, you can feel it in the house, because they had a hard time getting there, you know?
Yeah.
Sometimes it takes, like, 20 extra minutes for everybody to kind of warm up and relax and ease into the show. But I always feel like, you know... If you know what you want in the scene, if you have that to focus on, if you have the foundations, then they always kind of lead you back to the zone, you know. But yeah, how can you not be nervous sometimes? Are you
how
kidding me?
How can you not be nervous?
It should be there.
Just that, like,
yeah.
The format alone, you're in a dark room and the only lights are on you.
Yeah.
You know there's 1,000 other people there.
And
you don't feel alone, but to be, like, alone in the lights in an otherwise dark room.
And also, like, when people say they're not nervous, you're like, you're lying.
Or like you have no stakes tonight, but I do.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it.
You know, like
you
might not care as much or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's like going on a date. You're like, oh, I definitely know right now that I don't need another.
Yes.
So I'm myself.
Yes.
Right? And then you go on a date when the stakes are really high. And you're like, I need to marry you. And you can't, like, you're paralyzed. It's the same thing. It's like we're all on a seesaw.
Absolutely.
Just figure it out.
I know. And also, it always, again, it's like a great reminder that even Barbara Streisand's on that seesaw.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
Yeah.
Pleasure to share a seesaw.
No one gets out of
Barbara.
This world alive.
Amen.
Ooh.
Amen. Unless you know somebody. Shall we do our game, or should we do a little bit more, or should we do a thing?
Ooh, let's take a game break.
I have so many more questions, but we can, like... Put a pin in that and do this.
Let's take a game break.
Yeah, a game break.
So this is a game we like to play at the end of the year.
Okay.
I hope you keep a planner of some sort.
In my heart.
In your heart.
Do you have one on you right now?
A planner?
Yeah.
Like I have my iCalendar.
Perfect.
Perfect.
Okay.
So what we like to do is draw a month and a day from the bowl, and then we see what we were doing this year.
Oh, my God. This is amazing. Okay, I'm pulling out my calendar.
Mine's in
here. Who goes first?
Ladies
you
first.
Do,
okay.
Yeah, you do.
Okay.
Or whatever you.
Oh no, it's December.
Is.
Oh boy, is it tomorrow?
it says 24th, December 24th.
Oh my God,
that's so weird. Okay, I'm going to be in Chicago with my husband's family, and
her man.
Yeah, it'll be cold. We're actually going to be like in Kenosha, Wisconsin, which is like even colder.
Yes.
Yes, you know.
I do know.
It's kind of a cute little town. And so we'll have breakfast at this amazing breakfast place that we go to there.
It's like a diner.
Yeah, the coffee pie.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Sure.
Totally, you know.
Yeah.
So anyways.
And if they don't dribble a little bit of coffee, they're not doing it right.
Right?
If it doesn't fall down the white cup.
Yeah, if your cup is clean on the outside,
go to a different
any
diner.
Sort of diner experience.
Then it was
you're
wrong.
At a restaurant.
Also, how about diners are $1 million now? They're
One
so expensive.
Chicken tenders are like $16.95. Yes. No fries.
Yes.
No fries. Don't a la carte me, you diner. A diner, it comes with 8 billion other things. It's like side salad, baked potato.
I kind of keep my diner visits to the mornings. I love a diner breakfast.
Yeah.
Where there's 17 plates.
Delicious. I know nothing better.
So December 24th, I am doing my Christmas Eve tradition here in Astoria with my friends. And we do Tacuba in Astoria. And
great.
They know us there.
Great.
Margaritas. And then we go home happy.
Great. Sounds good.
I'm Jewish, but on Christmas Eve, we do like to watch the Judy Garland Christmas special with the commercials.
Amazing.
Wow.
Because they're all for cold medicine and dish liquid.
This is the best thing ever. That's amazing. I may be going to take a cue from you and copy that.
Highly recommend.
So great.
It's event television every year.
Oh, it's great.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
I'm going to draw another.
Okay, it's okay.
Okay, so first we have...
I love that you picked a date in the future.
I know, I wonder what that means.
We have September 13th.
September 13th. It was a Friday.
I had, just had another Friday the 13th yesterday.
That's so crazy. I had therapy, and then I had to take my little boy to school and pick him up, and my husband had rehearsal all day long. So that sounds boring.
Great.
Yeah, that's so lame. I had therapy.
This is good. The realness. What did I do? I worked here. It was a Friday. And then I catered a private party. Y'all, we all have side hustles. For this woman who's like an art curator.
I remember that.
But she's from like Brazil and like multi-million dollars, and there was food and wine, and I don't know, it was really fun.
Wow. Great.
Yeah. There was a band, and then she sang. Ooh. She sang. She had, like, karaoke in her living room. And then I go, okay, everyone, dance, dance, until you die.
You were meant for that party.
Yeah, that's hilarious.
I know, it was actually really fun.
That morning, I was working with Joel Grey, and then I caught at the AMC a matinee of a rescreening of The Little Mermaid.
Congratulations. That sounds like a good day.
You're welcome.
That wins.
Yeah.
For sure.
Sorry about your therapy.
Friday. No. I think that one's great. I was really happy about it. That's really funny.
Yeah. I need to find a therapist. Ooh. I just started the anti-Ds.
What's that?
Antidepressants.
Oh, great.
So I need to, like, find a therapist.
Absolutely.
Mine's nailing it.
Really?
He's nailing it.
Yeah? Good.
Yeah. New one. I had to like find a new one because the insurance. And that's always the hardest.
It's like the worst. Mine retired a couple of years ago. And she, so many people went to her. Like half of the company of Kinky Boots went to her because of me. I'd be like, go to Dr. T. But she's like, for a while, she'd be like, you can still call me after she retired, which was so sweet. And then I was like, I'm not doing that to you. I feel bad. Yeah.
But it took me a minute to warm up to him, but I'm into it.
Okay, good.
Which is fantastic.
It's his
such method. It is such a game changer.
Game changer.
You know, it is.
Oh, I'm so excited. That's going to be my 2020
gift
to myself.
A year from now, you'll be like, oh, man, I'm really happy that that's a part of my life.
Yeah. Totally. Just talking about it more out loud makes everything clearer.
And also having somebody strategize with you that's not your friend. You know?
Yeah.
It's great.
Whose only goal is, like, happiness. Let's get you to happiness.
Yeah.
That's amen.
It. Yeah.
Hallelujah.
All right, I'm on February 12th.
Oh, geez.
A while ago. Oh, ooh, I turned right to it.
You did?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Oh, my God.
I love this game so much. It's so stupid.
Okay, I went to yoga. Oh, no, actually, my husband went to yoga. I didn't go. It's in the calendar.
By osmosis.
Yeah, he went to Vinyasa Yoga with Sarah Morton. And then I took my son to speech therapy, which he graduated from at the end of spring. And I was the one who was like, let's go to speech therapy. They were like, he's okay. He's fine. I was like, we need to communicate. So moral of the story is now he's like over communicates. I don't care. I'm so happy about it. His vocabulary is incredible. And also, if your kid is like just struggling with something and everybody's like, oh, he'll catch up, why not get help for it? So then nobody's worrying about it. Yeah. Not even not worrying about it, but why do we have to struggle?
Why not at least seek the help out and then learn, like, I just have to wait.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like whatever. Anything that has the word therapy in it is only good.
Absolutely.
Unless it has the word conversion in front of it, and then we don't do that.
Amen.
But in general, it's
took
only,
me a minute at
it's
this
only
hour.
Good.
That's amazing. I just realized, too, I have so Jack's speech, and then it says Nathan and Steph are friends who told us they were pregnant that day, who just had their baby. And then, so we had lunch with them. And then it says rap show. I saw Freestyle Love Supreme before I knew what Freestyle Love Supreme was that night. And
rap show.
And yeah. And I just knew that it was like a rap. And then it was their opening night. So it was this really special, magical night. And Lynn came and did a bunch of like improv with them, improv raps. And it was one of the coolest things I've ever seen in the theater.
Amazing.
And it was when they did it downtown. Before I moved to Broadway. So, isn't that fun?
So, go see Freestyle Love Supreme.
Yeah, it's fantastic. It's so good.
On February 12th, Dana and I went and saw the revival of Merrily We Roll Along.
Oh, we did. We had like free cocktails up in the lounge. Do
yes.
you remember that?
Yes. And I took all the Andy's mints and put them in.
Yes.
I love an Andy's mint.
That's so funny.
Yeah, it was fantastic. We had a little date night.
Yeah. Because I don't know if you know, Dana's production company, the office in which we sit, produced that Merrily We Roll Along documentary.
Oh!
The best, worst thing that ever could have happened.
Oh my gosh.
I don't know if you've
I
seen
love
it.
Lonnie, yeah.
Yeah.
I have magic time with Lonnie. Like, he's so brilliant and special, and I'm so grateful that he was like, this story needs to be told, and then you made it happen.
Yeah.
I did an interview last week when we were doing press in London, and I talked about the documentary.
You did?
Oh, yeah, because Sondheim wrote Sunday in the Park right out. I'm sure you all know all this, but he wrote it right after Merrily. And so those two shows to me always kind of complement each other. There's the foundations of Sunday in the Park lie in the origin story of Merrily.
I had never thought about that.
Mm.
Wow.
That's so true.
Because it was... Because Stephen Sondheim and Hal Prince had more fun doing Merrily than they did anything else.
Yes.
And you see it in the footage. You see how happy they are. You see what a joyful experience it was. Mm-hmm. And all along the way, they thought it was in good shape. You know, that there were times where there was... But the two of them were like, well, it'll be fine. Anything that came up that wasn't going well, they were like, it'll be fine. And then the last 2 weeks were sort of like triage.
Mm-hmm.
But up until that point, right? You know better than I would because you know them.
Yeah.
And the way it was received was so heartbreaking for them that it explains...
Such a bummer. Because it kind of derailed their lives in a way. They kind of went their separate... ways.
Absolutely.
And it's like
when we were talking earlier about like what's expected of you once you're Barbara Streisand, once you're Stephen Sondheim and Hal Prince working together.
Absolutely. And then when and
that's
also,
just the ego getting in the way, by the way. They were operating as a passion project team, and whatever you do, if it's a passion project, it's out there. Whatever energy surrounds it is going to have good energy because it's coming from a place that had belief behind it.
Which is also why the show has lived on.
Exactly.
And become
you
a
don't
hit.
Know in like 30 years that this is going to be a cult. It's going to be people's favorite musical. It's going to be revered. There's going to be a documentary. It's going to change people's lives. It's going to do all these things.
Yeah.
And that's
it
why.
It all lies in intention.
Yes,
and
it
I
does.
Think the same thing can be true of like a lot of Sondheim's work is that sometimes, like I was comparing it a lot to Seurat last week. Like Seurat never sold a painting in his lifetime, but you know, especially Sunday at the, you know, La Grande Jatte is like heralded as one of like the top 10 best paintings of all time in history. But in his lifetime, he never saw that.
Mm-hmm.
And people put down his art. People were like, this is a mess. So basically,
Jonathan Larson.
They hung it over the refreshment stand.
Yes, exactly. And also, I think that Act 2 specifically of Sunday in the Park Act One always worked so beautifully because there's an element of pastiche about it. And now that we're 30 years away from 1986, there's an element of pastiche about Act Two that complements Act One. And Act Two was always meant and written as a mirror to Act One, and now it actually is. Because that tone and that style is appropriate once you're farther away in history from 1986. But I think when it was present day, I think it was hard for audiences to wrap their brain around it. And again, it's that element of, I hate to say this, but there's like an element of like, they're out to get you when you're up. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. There's so much.
Well, you're visible.
And there's like a magnifying glass when you're great. You know, like, what are you going to do next? I always sort of think like Lin after Hamilton, you know, he probably felt so much pressure after In the Heights. But then when people are like, well, you created one of the best musicals of all time, that must just be like, he's such a beautiful human. And I'm sure that he navigates that and incredibly well, way better than I ever would. But it's a lot of pressure to put on somebody.
Absolutely.
Well, getting back to RuPaul, the podcast this morning I was listening to was with Katya. Uh-huh. And Katya said, well, to be honest with you, I've hit all my goals already. So now it's just gravy. The rest is just gravy. And then RuPaul was like, I'm going to stop you right there. You have so much more to give. You can't even see what the rest of your goals are. You just know the ones you ticked off. He's like, if you told me 20 years ago that I would have the career that I have now, that I showed up for it, I wouldn't have believed you because I couldn't even imagine it. I just showed up for it. You know, so I think that's, this is getting very like,
stop worrying where you're going. Move on.
I was literally just going to say, stop worrying where you're going, move on, you know. And also the second set of lyrics when she's like, stop worrying if your vision is new. Let others make that decision. They usually do. You know,
every time.
And that is a response to Merrily, in my opinion.
Girl, you know, let's take a goosebumps break.
Seriously.
Because I just got full bod goosies.
It's what's your intention? Like, what is your intention? Why are you doing it? Why do you want to do it? You know, Uta Hagen has a whole section in Respect for Acting about why she doesn't read reviews. And while I think that reviews are like important for history, they're important for critical thinking. Reviews are important. Unfortunately, you know, another element of Sending the Park is theme is like commerce and art and how they connect and how they can't not be with each other, which is unfortunate. But also, especially in American musical theater, commerce drives the art. Yeah. So our level of quality in the American musical theater is driven by ticket sales. Our level of competition in the American musical theater is unfortunately driven by ticket sales. It's driven by commerce, you know?
Subscription base, tourism.
All of it. And
all of it.
You know, so they go hand in hand. So unfortunately, from a marketing perspective, from a producerial perspective, reviews are important because it helps get the word out and it helps people understand word of mouth. And, you know, but from an artistic perspective, there's like a twofold approach. Can it be helpful? Possibly. But it's always a great reminder that, like, everybody walks into the theater with something different in their heart, in their belly. Like, what'd you eat before you came to the theater? What happened to you before you came to the theater? I know for me that all affects, like, how I view a show. Is it raining? Yeah.
Well, you sort of touched on it, so I want to ask you, like, what do you want to see more of on Broadway?
Oh, great question.
That you feel is missing?
Well,
or has not been seen in a while?
You know, there's a lack of diversity in revived plays. Like, we do a lot of old white people plays, you know, and everybody's been saying that a lot. But, like, we should be doing August Wilson every year. So that's, like, a problem. That's something that needs to happen. And I also think that there's just not enough plays. You know, we put such an emphasis on musicals, which is absolutely, hello, yeah,
we love to sing.
Clearly,
love to
I
dance.
Love musicals.
Yeah.
But I also just think, like, when I do master classes and I teach, I'm always like, for every musical you see, you make sure you go see a play because it makes you a better musical actor.
Yes.
And also, some of them are getting lost, too. Some plays I feel like are getting lost. So that's something I would like to see more of. I feel like I almost weirdly feel like we don't do enough revivals. Like, some years there's like two revivals.
Right.
like, we should be doing more. They shouldn't cost so much, and we should just try to, you know.
We should easily
be
able to fill a Tony category of best revival.
Right?
Cut down on the movie, musicals, and let's
up the revivals.
Up the revives.
Right? I think so, too. I don't know.
And bring us something new with a revival. I mean, we don't have to dunk it in the river, but...
Again, I think something Sunday in the Park did so well. It was a very straightforward revival. There were no... you know, lasers or projections like the 2006 or 7 revival, but it was still so different. And I noticed the costuming above everything else. It was so clearly from the painting, but so clearly not a copycat of Anne Holt Ward's original designs.
Yeah. It was.
And how those colors transitioned into the second act, and everyone was kind of in their same palette, but a new person.
Absolutely.
It was so on the dot for me. On the dot.
I mean, like the idea was like a clean, clear concept, which is what the show starts with, like why Blake Page, you know, like all of the, everything was clean. And also he was mathematical. I would say like Seurat was a mathematical painter who had big heart, and you feel it in the painting. It's very similar to Sondheim. He's a mathematical composer who has a lot of heart, like da na da na, you know, that like chord couplet is like guts you right away, you know. Such an emotional
meditation. It's kind of a
totally.
Can we talk about second act?
Sure.
I watched it recently as my research.
Oh my god,
first of all, nailing it with the billing.
Oh, thank you.
Come on,
that's so funny.
Second of all, you're hilarious.
Oh, you're really sweet.
You're hilarious.
You're so sweet.
Steven's second act is on, what is it, Amazon Prime or something, or Netflix?
Showtime. Thank you, Val Buchholz.
Yes. I was like, you have to see it right now. It's delightful.
It's a great holiday film.
It is.
When we were doing it, I was like, oh, hopefully this will be like one of those Christmas movies that people
like. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
And what I loved that you did was, I mean, the movie starts and we think you're kind of on her side. Like, you're going to take her under your wing and show her the ropes. And this is your chance to kind of create a mini you. Teach her how to do it the way you want it done. But then you turn. Spoiler alert.
You
jump ship.
I turn into the bitch, which I was
a little villain.
I was a little villain.
You little villain.
Yeah, which was super fun.
Fun to play the villain.
Oh, I love playing the villain. It was great. I feel like, have I played the villain very often? No, I don't get to do it very often. Every once in a while, and like, I get to be that girl. But yeah, I spent a lot of time with J-Lo, and you guys, she does her own Instagram, which I think is very fierce. Like, you know, for somebody like J-Lo, she could have like a whole team of people just doing everything for her. No, she sits and does her own pictures on Instagram. It's very organic.
Get it. I mean, my favorite part of the film is you are doing street research in, I think, Queens, and you are asking the girl wearing all the makeup about her makeup.
That was
She's not having it, but she's not walking away. In my dream of dreams, there's like 45 minutes of that footage that didn't get used.
I love you.
And other questions that you have asked her.
We did that in 10 minutes and I improvised. The director was so magical and sweet. And he was like, just go for it. There's so many funny people in that movie. So he would let us basically do a bunch of takes where we just improv. So he was like, I would stop people who weren't background too. Like... We did it literally in 10 minutes.
What a dream.
It was magic. It was like fantasy.
That freedom and that license to kill. As someone wearing all of the makeup, do you have a favorite kind? I fell out of my sofa.
You're so sweet.
It's a great movie.
Thank you.
You're probably such a gift. I haven't ever worked with you, and I probably never will. But,
yes.
But to be able to have someone, a director, whatever, Jerry Mitchell, be like, these are the bones, go do what you do. That is fucking special. Because I don't know if a lot of people can.
Oh my gosh.
Do that?
Well, that's...
And improv and because of your cabaret and, like, your personality and growing up a drag queen. Like, I feel like a lot of that is good in a room and on set.
I, like, always... try to be as open as I possibly can to everybody else and myself. Like, always just know who I am and what I want, and then hopefully everything just like follows suit, you know. You're like, let's just see what happens. But specifically, like, I'm so grateful for Jerry Mitchell, because he did let me kind of take Kinky Boots and Lauren in a in a different direction. You know, she could have been so much more vanilla, and he was like, well, let's see what you got, girl. But
do
I'm
what
gonna
Emily
edit
does.
You.
I'm gonna trust you with this, girl.
And edit
what,
you.
Out of here,
he
you know?
Said that when we interviewed him. He said, I love getting a good group of people together.
Yeah.
And there's loyalty there. He has his pool of people, and he brings new people into it, and he was constantly plucking from that group because he knows it will be a good time in the room.
Absolutely.
Nobody
Amen.
Wants to be in a room that's not also fun.
I mean, he's the Judd Apatow of Broadway.
Everybody wants to be in his room.
Anyone.
That's the one thing about, like, he is so unbelievable at leading the team. You know? I love him. Magic.
We do too.
You were in Unbelievable.
Yeah. So grateful. It was like, you know, we were filming Unbelievable during the Judge Kavanaugh hearings, and it seemed so apropos, obviously. Mm-hmm. And I knew, you know, I didn't get to read the whole script because a lot of times when you work in TV and film right now, because of all of the security breaches and people not wanting the stories to get out, you only get what you're working on. So I didn't quite know what was happening in the rest of the story. I knew the real story. But I knew it was special. Like, I was like, oh, yeah. This is going to be, like, something really special. Like, I have a feeling this is going to be an important one. And I'm really lucky to be here. And I'm really lucky to be, like, a part of the storytelling.
It was on the best of TV lists.
It's
you know
amazing.
What I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Like, some buzzy stuff.
I'm so grateful. To that one, it's like, oh, that's just, like, a cherry on
How
the
fun.
Top. Because you're
yeah.
just... You're just so, like, grateful to be a part of something that's important storytelling.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm about to do American Crime Story impeachment, the story of Bill Clinton's impeachment, and I'm going to play Paula Jones, which is another, like, gift of a... I'm just so overwhelmed.
When that
news.
Press release went out, when that showed up in the Broadway briefing, I lost... my mind.
You sent me like 37 meatball subs about it.
I'm sure
like,
I did.
Like meatball sub icons, which is like our code for like
siren.
immediate attention.
That's so sweet. Well, the thing that's so cool about American Crime Story and Ryan Murphy in general is I think so much of his work is an act of social justice, and this mm-hmm. is included.
Exactly.
You know,
coming back to the Glee thing, like thank
absolutely.
You for telling these stories.
The prom.
Absolutely, and also yeah. like why are we telling this story? That's always like you know he comes to his work with that being the mm-hmm. first question, and in this specific instance, and I think the other two seasons of American Crime Story, I really feel like he's forcing people to look at a moment in history and not just how they reacted, but where they looked for their reaction. So where did you look for your news on this topic? And also how were people treated, even if they were not on the side that you want to be on in history? So in the instance of Paula Jones, like Paula Jones was treated horrifically by the press, by both political parties. She just had such a tragic sort of go, but we see her right now in history as being this Trump supporter that came to the debates, you know, sitting behind him. So that's what we see of her right now. But I'm, you know, people are going to come after me. Maybe this will be sort
it's
of a first.
Be
we'll be like, ooh, very well, it's great, yeah. It's fabulous.
Do you get kind of I don't know if it's like press briefing, but do you get some kind of like way to navigate that when you're playing someone who's so visible and known and maybe like bullet points
I'm sure
by the... Netflix or whoever the hell
yeah.
is?
Yeah, well, this will be with FX. I'm sure that we'll have conversations with Ryan, and I'm sure Ryan will have, you know, and the other
he'll
producers.
He'll be show dad.
Yeah, and yeah. Brad and Nina, the other two producers, are so present and available, and I'm sure that, you know, Linda Tripp is being played by Sarah Paulson, and Beanie Feldstein is playing Monica Lewinsky. They're going to get a lot more than I am, you know.
What a table to be
I
at.
Know.
I want to be at that brunch.
I know.
I'm sure you all talk
fabulous?
About it.
I'm so excited. My story is so separate from theirs. I won't get to be with them very much because, you know, Paula Jones is why he got impeached, because her suit is what started mm-hmm. started sort of the trickle that became a rainfall, you know. But anyways, that's...
I'm going to recommend a podcast if you're,
yes.
like, unfamiliar with the... or if you just need to revisit.
Yes.
It's been a while. Slate did a great 10-part podcast all about the Clinton scandal.
Mm. Yeah.
Those years. And yeah. it was really good.
Are you talking about Slow Burn?
Yes.
Yes, it's fantastic. Yeah, I listened to that, and it was fantastic. It's based off of Jeffrey Toobin's book.
I didn't know that
Yeah, they're using it as source material. They usually choose a book to use as source material. And anyways, I'm super grateful for that.
Are you in John Mulaney's Netflix thing?
Yes, I'm in the Sackledge Bunch. I get to see it on Monday night. I'm so excited.
I saw you post something. I'm like, she's in it?
Yeah. Oh, my God. I get to play White Girl Crying, which I'm really excited about. I have no idea. I shot for a day, and, like, I don't know what happened. I can't wait to see
it. It's my favorite credit of yours.
Like, role.
I'm so excited. I'm so grateful. It's another thing that I'm like, I'm so lucky I got to do that, because he's so special, and it's like a fantasy that what he's doing is something that I always wanted to have happen.
You are part of the Sex and the City legacy.
I am, which is crazy.
I mean, I have no questions about it other than, like, how does that, like, did you love watching the series and then you got to do the movie and you're like, oh my God, I'm a part of this legacy?
Yeah, you just said it for me. It was crazy. And also, I got to film on, like, such a special night. It was me, Bridget Everett, mm-hmm. the awesome actor who played the other person interviewing to be her assistant.
With the shoes.
Yes, the shoes. And then Jennifer Hudson, who had just won an Oscar and was like, felt, you know, all this pressure. And me and Bridget Everett spent a lot of time with Jennifer Hudson. Every time me and Bridget Everett ever see each other after that, because, you know, she's like a mega star.
Yeah, another cabaret queen who has got a fire under her ass the past few years.
Oh, my God. Unbelievable. And I saw her show, like, I don't know, 4 years ago. And she was like, girl, do you remember we spent all that time with Jennifer Hudson? I was like, do I remember? It was crazy.
First of all, that was a great Bridget impression.
At Starbucks.
At a Starbucks, the one in Astor Place. Down the street from the public.
I was just in that Starbucks.
Isn't that crazy? Yeah, so anyways, that was magic. And then also, Pat Fields, obviously, was the costume designer, so I got to spend time with Pat Fields, and I was, like, a label queen. It was really specific for her that I wore fake labels. She was like, we can't have the real stuff. Go to Chinatown right now and get the fake stuff. And then she costumed second act, and I became close to her and her assistant. They were so good to me, so kind to me. And there have been a couple times where I've needed help, like, I need a gown for this, and I need, like, Pat. And they've just been the best. Just everything you dream, Pat Fields.
Her Instagram is out of control.
Oh, my God, the best. She's just everything you always wished and dreamed she would be. She is. Mm. She's such a genius. She made me look at the use of a belt in a way I never thought I could.
Tell.
Amazing.
Oh, my God. I love her. I love her. And I love Sex and the City, and I love that you got to be a part of that storytelling.
Me too.
Come on.
Wait, where is your Sex and the City tattoo? You need to get one.
Where is my Sex and the City tattoo? It's just a Cosmopolitan on my ass?
Maybe. Or maybe it's the Post-it. I'm sorry, I can't. Don't hate me.
I mean, I do have that shirt. I did a Sondheim show at the Duplex, and we did, a friend of mine did it, and we read scenes from Sex and the City and then picked the right Sondheim song
to tell that story.
It was brilliant.
So I wore a yellow shirt that said, I'm sorry, I can't, don't hate me.
That's amazing.
And that was Sondheim in the City.
S-A-T-C. Love it. You're so funny.
Well,
we need to find a tattoo for you for 2020.
All right.
Because it's such a part of your life.
Great.
Done.
I want to very quickly talk about Sylvia. You played a dog.
Yes, I did play a dog with Matthew Broderick, who, this is a nice, like, all connected, because Sarah Jessica was the original Sylvia, and they were newly dating when she did it the first time, and he had a dog that he really loved a lot that she sort of based some of her dog off of. But yeah, Sylvia was, like, one of the most challenging things I've ever done as an actress.
I can imagine.
It was really, I created, like, a whole physical language that nobody knew except for me and Nathan Peck, who helped me with some of the physical stuff, and Faye Simpson, who's an incredible movement teacher who does a lot of stuff from chakras, like a lot of chakra work. So I worked a lot with her trying to figure out, like, the chakra spaces of a dog. That was just super helpful for me from a movement perspective.
The chakra spaces of a dog.
I know, it sounds crazy, but that was my way
in. I've never
thought
about it.
It was like, and also some people were like, people who have dog, even if you don't have a dog, sometimes people were like, I don't know why, but I sort of like just believed you were a dog at some point. And I was like, that's the best compliment ever. And I feel like it was the chakra work, because they are constantly moving in and out of, like, sometimes the dogs are in a sexual space. Sometimes they're in a, like, a maternal space. Sometimes they're in an explosive, like, exploded first chakra place where they're, you know, have no filter. Sometimes they're scared, and sometimes their seventh chakra is exploded, and they can feel your energy and sense exactly what you're feeling. Mm-hmm. Little things like that, where it's just like helped me wrap my brain around, like a dog, because they don't talk.
Sure.
But I talked.
I saw you front row in that.
You did.
I did, and obsessed with you, like in a weird, like crazy. I should maybe get. It was so incredible.
That's
like,
so sweet. Thank you.
Your performance was just so stupid.
That's so nice
and so specific. And now thank that you describe that, that's why I was like, "How is she doing this?"
That's so nice of you. That's I really
but you just answered.
I'm about to pay the weirdest compliment you've ever received. Every time we take our dog out for a walk, we think of you because we have the Sylvia poopy bag dispenser.
I have it too. Still, I still have it.
Yeah,
that's amazing.
They made those?
Yeah.
Bradley Flea Market, baby.
OMG. Yeah.
They made a. You know, they didn't sell them too. I don't know why. I remember I got like, I have them. I have a few extra too that are just like I'll just keep them forever because they're so weird and funny.
What a weird, perfect souvenir.
Yeah.
It's exactly what I want.
And
so I think of you three times a day.
Thanks.
In the weirdest
I'll think of you
way.
when I take Gracie out, my dog too.
And we'll know on some level.
Magic.
We'll know that we're walking our dogs at the same time.
Amen.
Aww. But enough about me, let's talk about you. What do you think of me?
First question we ask everybody was, what was your first impression of each of us?
Of both of you?
Ever.
Magic and magic. Kindred spirits. Most likely liked the same section of Blockbuster film that I did when we were all 12.
100%. We all thought we were special.
If we all lived in the same town.
But we were all in different areas of the country doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Amen.
And I'm like, no one else knows Mac the Knife, and I'm in fifth grade. I was friends with all my teachers because I like knew Lawrence Welk.
I love you.
Like, you know, just like the stupidest.
Yeah. That God meant for us to be here right now together and was like preparing us for this special time that we live in New York City.
Thank you.
Hi ho! Hi ho!
Hi ho! There are seven very well-known dwarves in history. If you were the eighth, what would your name be?
I was gonna say Gassy.
That's hers.
That's mine.
Oh, I love it. That's amazing.
Yes.
That's so. Has anybody else ever said that except for you?
Just me.
Just Dana.
Because I'm real.
Oh, I love it.
Everyone else should.
See, I told you, beshared kindred spirits. That's amazing. What's yours?
Nishi.
Nash. That's so funny.
I'm Nishi dwarf.
Oh my god, that's so funny.
Because he does pick those moments in history that are just like
amazing.
The way you speak is so niche.
And like any reference I have is the most bottom of the barrel.
I really can
still quote All About Eve beginning to end.
Amazing.
It's the greatest film.
Oh, it's of the all best. Time. There's a reason I picked Bette Davis's last. I mean, hello. Amazing.
But if it wasn't Gassy, because I'm already
okay.
Gassy.
Oh, yeah. I could talk about the gut microbiome all day.
Part two with Emily Ashford.
Yes, got my microbiome. I think my other dwarf name, if it wasn't Gassy, would be like Winky. Like I love a sensible wink. And I love
I'm
what a wink means.
I love Winky.
I love
you.
What a wink means too. It means like you're good. I see you.
Mm-hmm.
I support you. Or that was lame that just happened.
I'm undressing you.
I know what you're thinking.
Yeah.
And I'm here with you.
And I support you.
Yeah,
I give you love. In a magic
way. I wink to
way.
Celebrities.
I do too.
Just to be like, I see you, but I'm not going to be weird. Maybe my wink is weird.
Maybe it's the...
is my wink weird? You're a celebrity.
It's the new, like, tip of the hat.
Yeah.
You're just like...
I do it too when I'm working and I feel like a little uncomfortable or I don't want to interrupt what the director's saying and they're telling me notes or something, mm-hmm. I'll wink. And then some people are like, don't even think twice about it. And some people are like... really thrown off because I do it sort of like an old man.
I was gonna say it's very like
1930. Oh again.
Yeah, you're like twirling your cane at the same time.
You drive a car that goes ooga.
That sounds great. That sounds great.
What do you want to plug? I know you have a massive New Year's Eve show you're coming up.
Oh yeah,
that's probably sold out. So maybe you don't even have to plug it.
We're not quite sold out yet. It's close. apparently, but not quite. We're this year for New Year's, we're going to look back at the last decade because we're ushering in the new decade. So that's kind of fun. That's been like kind of crazy. And Miss Piggy's sister, Miss Porky, will be talking about the last decade. She'll be making a cameo. We also have cameos by the Wizard of Time, who will be Father Time, who tells us what time it
is.
Played by Breedlove. And then also my dear friend Sleece Henderson, who's a genius.
Three seats for me at your opening, at the Sunday opening.
She's a genius.
She's a rock star queen.
They always join me for New Year's, and she plays Cupid. I may talk her into bringing her guitar, and she may play a little for us. Chris Dawn is also going to help us by being the New Year's baby, and we're going to have New Year's baby bingo. So we're going to play bingo.
Perfect.
And we're going to sing, we're going to start the show off with some funk. Like Funky Town, and We Got the Funk, and Celebration. I'm gonna sing. I'm gonna do a little Cyndi Lutling. We'll do True Colors because it's been a great 10 years for gay rights. Yeah. So we have to sing True Colors.
Of course.
It's just gonna be really silly and fun, and I just really want people to have like a good night and let their hair down, and I want people to play bingo because I love bingo.
The best.
Yeah, isn't that fun?
Oh, you're a drag queen.
I know.
And drag queens host bingo, and you're living your actual dreams.
I just want to take a second to also plug your album, your live 54 Below album that is available through Broadway Records.
Yeah, if you go on Broadway Records.
It's iconic.
You're so sweet.
Album.
I wanted it to be live because I wanted it to be like all my favorite cabaret albums, like Sibling Revelry, and you know, another one of my favorites is Ella in London. It's like so fabulous. Anyways,
Mona Lisa's in Mad Hatters.
Thank you.
Is excellent work.
Thank you so much.
That mashup really.
My favorite New York song.
Deliver.
Two New
you
York
and
songs.
Will are so good together.
Thank you.
So
we have a lot of fun. He's also so much more organized than me, which is so great. Keeps me on track. He texted me this morning. He was like, "You got your pig song ready?" It's like, "It's coming. I'll give it to you by the end of the day." Anyways.
That's why it works. Thank you so much for spending your Saturday morning with us.
Guys. Oh,
this is a great way to wake up.
Kindred
it's like
spirit beshared.
Real life Saturday morning cartoon.
Oh, I know. I'm sorry. I have a 3-year-old. We had child care coordination, so that's how it worked out.
Here
so it was
are.
Meant to be.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys.
You're the best.
You're the best. Thank you so much for listening, and if you don't have New Year's Eve plans yet, head over to 54below.com and get those tickets for bingo and disco and dancing and open bar.
Yeah.
Yes. And everyone have a great holiday season. Be safe.
Get into
be well
it.
Fed.
And we will be dropping an episode New Year's Eve.
Oh, we will.
So
we
will be a part of your holiday.
I guess I'm working. So everyone else, enjoy.
Happy 2020.
Happy 2020. We'll see you in 2020.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Do you always do that?
Yeah. Yep.
Amazing.
In the Room with Stephen and Dana is produced by Stephen Farazee
and Dana Craig. Special thanks to Joel Wagoner for tinkling the ivories on our theme song. Hit him up at joelwagoner.com.
We apologize, and you're welcome. We'd also like to thank Jesse Wiener, Wiener, for our jazzy original music sprinkled throughout each episode.
You can find him at jessewiener.com.
Last but certainly not least, we'd like to thank Kevin Thomas Garcia for taking all of our ridiculous photos. You can find him online at ktgnyc.com. We are all over the internet on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at In The Room Pod.
Follow us, like us, share us, pimp us out.
And don't forget to subscribe to In The Room Podcast. We everywhere, so subscribe. And thank you so much for listening.
Thank you so much.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.